a key part to building a new manufacturing robots or new pieces of industrial automation is knowing where the old stuff failed.
Welcome to Manufacturing Happy Hour, the podcast where we get real about the latest trends and technologies impacting modern manufacturers.
Manufacturing
Happy Hour. Each week, we interview industry experts that are at the top of their craft and give you the tools, tactics, and strategies you need to take your career and your business to the next level. And now, your host, Chris Lukey.
Hey, it's episode 181. Today, we're discussing leadership and ethics in the adoption of robotics. Our guest this week is Ryan Garapi, CTO of Clearpath Robotics and Auto Motors. Founded back in 2009, Clearpath Robotics builds the world's best robot development platforms and have truly simplified the development of autonomous robots, while Auto Motors focuses on AMRs and material handling specifically. Ryan's going to give us more of a rundown as we get into this episode. Plus, there's been some big news around Ryan and his companies lately because they were acquired by Rockwell Automation in 2023. Now that you've got a bit of background, here are three things you can expect from this episode. First, we'll hear about Ryan's career in robotics, from his early days working with one of the world's more renowned robotics companies to creating Clearpath Robotics and Auto Motors. Second, we get into the title of this episode and discuss ethics and leadership in robotics, focusing on the right applications, creating a vision, being aware of the role robots play on their own or as part of a broader industrial operation. And then finally, we'll learn about some of Ryan's other work and hear more of his perspectives on the future of robotics. As always, if you want to learn more, make sure to check out the show notes page at manufacturinghappyhour.com/181. And I'd also encourage you to join me at the Robotics Summit on May 1st and 2nd, 2024 in Boston, Massachusetts. I'll be there. Ryan's going to be there. This is the world's leading event for commercial robotics developers, and I want to emphasize developers. It's focused on helping engineers learn how to develop the next generation of commercial robots. So it's a bit different than a lot of the events I go to or the ones I talk about on this show. It's an education conference plus an expo, and it's bringing together some of the brightest minds in robotics. We're talking about folks from Amazon Robotics, Disney Research and Imagineering, my friends from the Pittsburgh Robotics Network. If you want to join me in Boston on May 1st and 2nd, then head to manufacturinghappyhour.com/robotics2024. And with that, it's time to meet up with this week's guest. We're going to catch up with Ryan Garapi. Ryan, if we were having today's conversation over a beverage, where would that be? Paint the picture, describe the scenario.
Well, usually, I mean, this is a, you know, manufacturing happy hour. So as much as there's many places I might like to have drinks, it would normally go down to some sort of conference, probably some sort of manufacturing conference bar. The typical stereotypical hotel bar with some, you know, whiskey or something like that would probably be the way this sort of thing would play out. But, you know, I'm still in my, like we were talking a little bit earlier, even though I'm working from the office most of the time, I'm taking this call from my like COVID era home office. So a little bit different.
Hey, the office has style, got a great backdrop, got the Canadian flag, got some musical instruments behind you. But hey, you and I believe are going to be hanging out together at the Robotics Summit here in about a month in Boston. So let's say we're hanging out at that hotel bar. You know, when someone asks you, hey, what does Clearpath Robotics do? How do you answer that as if you're having a beverage at a bar? And I'll preface this with, we're going to get to Auto Motors a little bit later. So let's
just the Clearpath answer first. Yeah, well, it's pretty simple. Clearpath's the world leader in supporting robotics research and development. That's what it comes down to.
I love it when you can get that answer out in just like 10 seconds, because Some people's bar answers are a lot longer than that. I have to ask you, because you are a world leader in robotics research, your company started basically right out of college, essentially. Yes. And as I understand it, You're in a basement with your buddies. But before we get there, was there a formative moment in your life pre-university that you got excited about robotics? Can you like think back to that time in your life?
Yeah, I think I always just, there was always this like love of science fiction as a kid, right? And, you know, Star Trek with Commander Data and R2-D2. I know I'm not the only one saying who has that, because so many people I've talked to in the industry really take their themes back to, like a lot of themes back to science fiction and like what can happen. And I also really like the idea of building things that, you know, that had like a little bit of life to them, for lack of a better term. And where I went to school before university was a smaller city called Barrie, Ontario, north of Toronto in Canada. And there wasn't FIRST Robotics there at the time. So I just kind of had to, I thought I liked robots and put in the application to mechatronics engineering, and I hoped I was right. And it turns out I really do like robots. So that was a good risk I took then.
Well, you're not wrong. The people I've talked to that have made a career out of robotics were into science fiction. So I have to ask then, do you have a favorite pop culture robot?
I think I still go back to the tried and true, the R2-D2. He's just helpful. There's all sorts of, and I think you can almost look at all these like newer science fiction robots. There's a lot more that kind of draw inspiration from those earlier ones too. And I think that's one of the things. And you could argue that possibly plays into the choice of robotics that I've chosen to build now. They're a lot closer to R2-D2 than a lot of others.
So I do have one more question then, because R2-D2, I feel, has come up a lot. I also think of C-3PO as pretty helpful. Why does everyone seem to gravitate towards R2-D2 versus C-3PO in your opinion?
I think it's the personality, honestly.
I like it. Hey, I could talk pop culture all day long, but I do want to get back to your story with ClearPath. So I was hinting at this before. You founded the company in a basement with three of your friends. Tell us the story and why you decided to go down the path of building this company.
Yeah, I mean, aside from just general poor decisions. So early on, all four of us went through the University of Waterloo, which had this really great internship and co-op program. And I was fortunate enough to be, I think I was the second, halfway through my university, I was the second co-op that Kiva Systems ever employed. I think there were 30-odd people at Kiva when I joined. And obviously, we all know what happened with that. It went pretty well for that company. And I remember, at least like personally, just hearing the story on how they were inspired to build. Like, they saw these trends, they saw the demand, they saw the technology was there. They were inspired to build this company, and nobody would help them. Like, nobody would take them seriously. And so they did it all themselves. And as they say, the rest is history. But myself and actually one of the other co-founders, Pat, he was an intern there as well, a little bit later on. And we said, like, maybe there's an opportunity here. And we'd also spent a lot of time building robots for robot competitions. And we spent all the time just fighting with the robots. Like, we were machining individual tracks by hand, like set up jigs and on the mill all night, just machining individual tracks by hand, designing motor controllers ourselves, writing all the firmware ourselves. Obviously, ROS did not exist. So simulation, logging, it's all from scratch, just to like enter into like some simple robot competition. And that just seemed, and we knew all these researchers were doing that too. And we seemed like, no, there's got to be a better way to do that. And more importantly, we think there's going to be demand. So we started saying, let's just start exploring it. And slowly, and I still, to this day, cannot remember us making a decision to actually say it's all or nothing. It just seemed to be that, you know, we took a little contract. There's like a $6,000 contract that we took and said, okay, well, now we've got revenue. I guess we should incorporate, which I know is a weird thing these days, but revenue, then incorporation. And then we started selling some, for lack of a better term, vaporware on data sheets. And then people started buying that. So we built those and we started hiring people. And now we're Rockwell's latest acquisition. And it just seems like it's been this, honestly, this slow evolution along the way. Like, there's been ups and downs, but there was never a point where we said, like, okay, we're in this or we're not.
Yeah, that's a really unique perspective from a startup, especially in this day and age, as you were just sharing. And I, you've had quite the career adventure so far. As I was doing my research prepping for this, I saw that you had that internship at Kiva. And I think our audience out there is, you know, very familiar with this, but Kiva, Amazon Robotics, they were purchased. So I do want to go back to a question about that. Was there a vibe you got at that company where you're just like, something big is happening here, but the world doesn't see it yet? I'm just curious, because I'd love the manufacturing leaders to pull something from this where maybe they can understand from you where you get a sense that, hey, something might be going somewhere. Or maybe there wasn't that feeling there, but I'm curious to hear your perspective.
Actually, yeah. So one of my first internships when I was, I was 19 or 18 years old, I was working in equipment engineering at a Honda plant, Honda Plant 2, Alliston. And one of the things that I was got really enthusiastic about was the AGVs they had there. They were not good. I will not name the manufacturer, but they were not good. They were always broken. They were hard to configure. There was no flexibility. Everybody hated them. And they were like, this is not the future. And then I go 2 years later, I work for like Kiva. And one of the things I was working on there, I was heavily involved with expanding in a 120 robot system to a 500 robot system in some random Staples distribution center. And it was like night and day, the level of the technology. And I think that was saying, like, you know, these 2 points on the line defined that trend and said, this is where this technology is going to be. And everyone is ignoring it. And they're not seeing the potential here. But those 2 points really defined the trend. And I've seen that trend continue for sure.
What a great tip for getting a diversity of experiences and seeing how different things operate in different places, right? Because at least from what I heard, because you had 2 experiences so close to one another where you just saw a drastic difference in the performance of robotics, it caused you to realize, hey, this company's probably going somewhere. The technologies that I saw at the last company, maybe not so much.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, even to this day, when I go to a conference or a trade show, what I look for is not what is being showed off in this instance in time. It's what was showed off 6 months ago and 12 months ago. And like that really helps. That informs us more than just what some random company put forward at a single instance in time. It's like, what are these trends? Because the trends mean something.
Yeah, well, I told you I'd be asking you, hey, what does Auto Motors do? Describe what Auto Motors does as if we're having a drink with one another. So give us your quick answer on what Auto Motors does.
Yeah, the short answer is autonomous production logistics. We help factories, we help production operations move stuff from point A to point B as efficiently as possible.
And this is one of the things I find so fascinating about the two companies that you created, is that one, ClearPath Robotics, really focused on helping companies and people get off the ground with robotics without having to reinvent the wheel every time, like you were experiencing at Kiva. In the case of Auto Motors, this is a more vertically integrated company, as I understand it, of AMRs for the materials handling industry specifically. So what caused you to realize there was an opportunity to create what seems like a kind of a different type of company, all things considered?
Yeah, well, one of the unfair advantages of ClearPath Robotics that a few investors picked up on, fortunately, is that we have this unique insight, this unique trusted insight into all sorts of trends, into corporate research, what they're interested in academic research, government research, all sorts of different things. And what we were seeing back in the 2013, 2014 days is first, as you and probably many watchers recall, Kiva was acquired in 2012. And then other manufacturers are starting to say, okay, maybe there's something here. And so we started to see an increase of our corporate clients reach out to us, asking us for very specific things. It wasn't just production logistics. There were mining companies. There were some others. Like, there's always trends in robotics of people reaching out. But one of them, pertinent to automotors, is a lot of manufacturing clients started to say, well, how can this help us? And at the same time, a lot of researchers were no longer interested At least, you know, they're always saying they're interested in all these topics because that's how you get grants. But if we look at what they were talking to us for, the academic researchers were no longer talking to us about the technology advancements that you need to succeed in factories. So whether it's path planning, robot controls, SLAM, docking technology, all of these things that used to be research topics just a few years previous, the academic researchers were no longer interested in that. And so what that told us is that we've got a market pull from the corporates, and the technology readiness levels are high enough that it's actually relatively low risk to engage. It becomes more of an engineering problem than a research problem. So those things, plus a bunch of, looking at a number of other trends, that all came together that said, maybe now's the time. Like, this is our place. Like, this is our place to engage. And it was always our intent when we started ClearPath to see if we could make some other vertically integrated businesses out of it. And that those are the things that all came together and said, well, let's do that. And I mean, just to maybe add on a few other things, like, we were also taking into account some other factors, right? Like I mentioned mining, but it's really hard to start a mining company when you're a bunch of, like, 20, we would have been 24 and then 27 or something like that in Southwestern Ontario. It's really hard to do that. And on top of that, like, the economic factors in mining are not the best. There's a strong manufacturing base in Southwestern Ontario, in the Detroit area, the Milwaukee area, Chicago area, which are all fairly close. All of that came together and said, like, let's do this manufacturing thing.
We'll be back in a moment, but first, a quick word from our sponsor. Hey, I'm excited to welcome Harding to the Manufacturing Happy Hour family as our newest sponsor. Harding is all about connectivity. In the industrial world, we talk a lot about data, how it helps you make decisions. We talk about power and control. But how many of you are thinking about how that data and that power actually moves from point A to point B? Harding provides the connectivity to make that all happen. While plenty of companies sell connectors and cable assemblies, few engineer them like Harding. Engineers worldwide rely on Harding for designing connectivity into the most challenging environments. From trains conquering the Swiss Alps to offshore wind farms and every kind of industrial machinery you can imagine, Harding solutions move power and data across vital applications globally. They've been doing this for over 75 years, and they'll continue to empower their customers to shape the future with dependable connectivity. Keep on listening to Manufacturing Happy Hour to learn more about Harding and how they help our manufacturing world go round. And now, back to today's episode.
Your story is so interesting because it's very different from a lot of the stories that I think a lot of people think of when they think of startups. You know, even just going back to, hey, you had revenue and then you incorporated after that. It's like you're doing things in the logical order, but the opposite order that a lot of folks have done them in now. So if you had to summarize, thinking back on, let's say, that first part of your career to the creation of Auto Motors, what's maybe one of the lessons you would say you can share from your experience that manufacturing leaders can learn from that are trying to navigate new technologies, trying to prioritize? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Manufacturing leaders in general. So we're talking about, like, the ones who are established in manufacturing companies, talking about, like, manufacturing startups.
Let's talk about established ones first. Yeah. And then we might go to startups after this, because it feels like this could be two different answers.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm going to assume that everyone's read things like The Innovator's Dilemma and things like that. I think the important thing for manufacturing leaders is to find the appropriate, these days especially, is to find that appropriate balance between innovation and hype. There is so much hype around these days. And there's continued to be hype around these days. And that's really great. Like, there's a ton of capital around trying to solve major problems in manufacturing. That's very exciting. And I much prefer it than where I saw capital deployed just, 10 years ago or 5 years ago. But there's a lot of hype that goes with it. But on the other hand, you can't just ignore the hype. Like, you have to look, as Matt, our CEO, is fond of saying, look for the signal and the noise. And I think it's, think that's the important thing. It's finding that balance.
So my next question, I think, is a nice segue from this one. How do you minimize distractions? How do you block out the noise? Because in your story, you had created Clear Path Robotics. You were paying attention to what the people you were working with were saying, and it ultimately led you to realize, hey, this is where we can double down in a more vertically integrated business with automotors. So you were out there, you were listening, but how did you effectively, you know, find that balance between innovation and hype while also having blinders on a little bit so you weren't getting distracted by every bit of hype out there?
I think like every day, every week, every month, you've always got to be spending like a lot of your time thinking about what's coming up this quarter and a little bit of other time thinking about, well, what's coming up in the next, you know, 1 or 2 years, 1 or 3 years or what have you. And then sometime just stepping back and saying what's going to come out in the next decade. And those balances of time change, like they change depending on how many fires you've got at the office at any given time or what your state of mind is. So it's not saying like every day you need to find like 70, 20, 10% or something like that. But I think it's important to always have that time to be thinking about that. And maybe the time when you're thinking about what's going on in the future is like when you're on a plane or something like that. And hopefully you're not completely tied to your work Wi-Fi. Or you're just walking in the forest or what have you to think about what's coming. But I think it's important to always have that balance and then help that address, like, and use that to help guide your team, right? And to say, like, this is where our priorities should be. And that's there's all sorts of lessons around how to do that properly. And I'm sure people have written, like, literal books. There's probably, like, some overpriced MBA executive courses on just that topic. But I think that's really what it comes down to. And I think it's also important, even if you could get locked into some sort of 20, 70, 20, 10% thing and have some hyper scheduled day, I think it's also important to have that flexibility because some days will need 100% of your time focused on the immediate burning fires. But other days, particularly as if we're still speaking to these manufacturing, you know, leaders and executives, some of these days, the best thing you can do is stay out of the tactical stuff and spend time thinking about what's next.
Yeah. It's funny. I've been learning that as a solo business owner these past 6 months, just, you know, because I think I default to really wanting to be focused on the strategic and the long term things. So for me, it's just like, no, today needs to be on the urgent, the things that have been piling up, the things that need to get done. So I appreciate all the advice here. Another question I have is we've been talking about innovation. There's a lot of hype and energy in this space right now. One thing I'm curious about is where you see adoption right now and industrial leaders. Do they have is it courage or vision? Because I feel like there may be a lack of some of these things, because while we talk about robotics a lot, at least from my perspective, I'm not seeing the adoption maybe I thought I'd be seeing at this point after all the talk and the technology and the advancements that have been made here in the past few years. So I'm going to reframe my question. What type of courage or what type of vision do you need as a leader in this space to bring the research, development, and adoption of robotics to life?
So if we're talking about the people who are adopters of this technology, as opposed to the builders of this technology, if we're talking about those, I've actually seen a, particularly post-COVID, a massive demand for this technology. I've seen incredibly high demands on the sales side. I'm seeing people making decisions faster on this technology. I'm seeing people trust it. I think that's all really positive. Honestly, I think that's speaking to the multinationals, the large companies who can afford this, who have their own groups, who can take these risks, both financially and people-wise. There's a huge amount of demand there. And I don't think we're short on it globally. I think if we look at the small to mid-sized companies, the situation's a little bit different. I don't think that's necessarily something that's entirely under their control. Like small and mid-sized companies are all under all sorts of pressure, whether it's pressure, you know, from different companies in different countries, whether it's pressure from multinationals, whether it's pressure from their own companies. And I think these small companies have a lot less ability to adopt this technology. They just don't have the time to think about it, or they don't have the balance sheet to take the risk. But I think if we come down to like that will come. If we look at how do we drive this adoption further, I think a lot of it comes down to the new product developers, whether they're traditional companies like the incumbents or whether they're new startups. I think there's a lot which we as product developers could be doing better, honestly.
I have two questions here. One is a pretty direct question. So first of all, I love hearing that you're seeing the adoption continue. When I look at the numbers are there to definitely suggest that we're seeing more adoption. Robot sales are up. And you're right, it's been a very much post-COVID type thing where we've seen this acceleration. Let's focus on the little guys for a second, those small to mid-sized manufacturers. What is one thing that can help a small to mid-sized manufacturer minimize the risk of investing in robotics?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm going to look at like what a, let's just focus on like what could a startup do versus, you know, what could a government do or anything like, or like what could A3 do? But if I look at like what could a startup do, I really like these startups who are solving like a very specific problem, and they're not trying to hyper generalize. They're solving a very specific problem, and they know that with success, they'll be able to grow from there. Like there's some that I'm seeing who are just saying like, we're going to make it very easy to solve a palletizing problem. Like this is a palletizer in a box. And yeah, it might take up a little bit more space, but it's very low risk. You can just, you know, basically drop it in and work with it. I think those sorts of things where they're very, very specific and saying like, you know, we're not going to raise $1 billion to try to solve all manufacturing, but we as manufacturers ourselves or past manufacturers ourselves know that like welding pipes is a very difficult problem, or, you know, forming sheet is a difficult problem, or, you know, depalletizing some random little corner, like some random little thing that nobody thinks about, but makes the world go round is a difficult problem. And they focus in on that. And I think that's really great to see. And if I may, there's also something that I'm seeing now that you've got robot companies who have been around in manufacturing enough, and people have been with robots enough in manufacturing to start exiting and to start joining other companies and start founding their own companies. I think that's really important too, because you can't build like a key part to building a new manufacturing robots or new pieces of industrial automation is knowing where the old stuff failed. We were unique as a company that we jumped in with. I mean, I had manufacturing experience, but very limited. And that's certainly not the right way to do it. Now, people start with knowing, with already having like a little bit of combination of real manufacturing experience, knowing those pain points and knowing the technology. And I'm very excited to see where that goes.
Yeah, I was taking a lot of notes on that answer. Super helpful. Solving a very specific problem is a great tip, whether we're talking about robotics or really a lot of business challenges as well. And then now that we're further into the adoption and development of robotics, you have people with experience that know where the old stuff didn't work and can learn from that, leverage that to have less of those, I would say, micro failures going on in their next ventures.
Next round of our interviews coming up right after a word from our sponsor. If you want to empower your frontline leaders through standard work and skills development, then you need to check out Swipe Guide. Their collaborative platform lets frontline teams coordinate instructions, job aids, and training to optimize processes. But don't take it from me, hear it from their clients. Here's a good one. Swipe Guide has been a game changer for our organization. We're now able to train our employees more quickly and effectively, and we've also seen a decrease in the number of errors and mistakes that are made. Swipe Guide was recently awarded Easiest Company to Do Business With and ranked one of the most user-friendly software solutions in the UX Design Awards. Plus, they're trusted by industrial frontrunners around the world, including PepsiCo, ABB, and Heineken. Speaking of Heineken, if you want to hear what it's like when Swipe Guide is implemented on a global scale, then head back and listen to episode 167, where Heineken's own Joris Stolk and Swipe Guide CEO Wilhelmine Schneider discuss the impact this platform has had on their frontline teams and international brewing operation. Check out Swipe Guide today by going to swipeguide.com. And now, back to today's episode.
The next question I have is for the big guys, though, because you're talking about how you are seeing that investment at those largest organizations. My question is, are these one-off robotics projects, or how do they tie in to a larger digital transformation vision? Can you share what you're seeing from your perspectives in that regard?
And that actually is a risk of... That's a risk, I think, when big companies run these adoption programs. And I've seen it happen a lot from the supplier side, where they will say, you know, let's add one robot. Okay, maybe 10 robots. Now maybe let's make this a digital transformation. Let's make this let's move from brownfield to greenfield. And then at a certain point, you're like 2 years in, and the people who originally just wanted to install that single robot are gone, and your champions are gone. And the executives may still be excited, but they have no managers who are willing to champion it through. I think that's the sort of risk that comes through. And I think, and this is one of the reasons I've always been really excited about AMRs, is that you can deploy them one at a time. And yes, you can derive data from them and you can expand them, but you don't need to do a factory-wide digital transformation program. You can just deploy them one at a time and then, yeah, start hooking more things onto the API and, you know, and then maybe you do some refactoring of how your entire data, you know, how your entire, you know, data collection and analysis system works, but it's on the back of a existing set of automation that's already delivering value. I think the top down digital transformation programs, like sometimes they're necessary and they can be done, but they're high risk. Like I would look at it like as a manufacturing company, I would look at it as, it's an ERP, like ERP integrations or ERP installations or migrations, they get done, but they're expensive and they're risky. And if there are easier ways to achieve your goals in the short term, then maybe you should do so.
So am I hearing this right? That yes, robots can be part of the digital transformation, but based on turnover and people that have the vision, moving into new roles, moving on to new companies, hey, make sure the robots are a great standalone solution where you're not going to lose, let's say, that broader vision in that robot line, that one robot, those 10 robots, whatever it is. Do you think that's a right way to interpret that?
I might turn it on its head and say there's many components. Like if I look at those top-down digital transformation programs and visions and canvases, there's a lot of components that fit into that are both that are necessary but insufficient for those sorts of major programs to occur. But robots are one of the few components which are both necessary and sufficient to drive value just on their own. So, you know, when in doubt, install some more robots, I guess.
I love it. Well, hey, we're gonna switch to a slightly different topic. Because as I understand it, you've been speaking about robo-ethics, as we'll call it. I know it's probably not a word in the dictionary, but robo-ethics, I think, summarizes it pretty well. What is one of the most important ethical considerations around the adoption of robotics right now in 2024?
So how focused are we talking? We're talking manufacturing or more broadly in society?
Let's go manufacturing. I feel like we can open a big Pandora's box if we go too broad.
And many people have. I think in manufacturing, it's actually fairly simple. There's a lot of robot companies out there, very traditional, who know their way around safety, and a lot of companies that don't. And I think the first fundamental thing is, in the end, we all need to be focused on the safety of the humans who are working around the robots. I mean, that's the first thing. And it's always about, you know, speaking as I'm a little biased here, because speaking as a supplier who's invested a lot in safety, of course, I'm going to say stuff like this, but it's important. There are companies out there, I see them at trade shows, and you just look at them and it takes you 30 seconds to look and say, that is a multi-ton robot with zero safety LIDARs. Like there's still simple questions, unfortunately, that need to be asked, that, you know, one of our robots is going to be safe when deployed. A lot of our North American peers, European peers, Asian peers, like around the world, there's a lot of safe robots out there, but just because they look the same doesn't mean they're designed the same. And that's the fundamental. And then I think the other thing is, and you know, this is just best practices for technology adoption along with ethics, is to really include everyone in the adoption of this technology. and make sure that people are, that everyone's involved with this, because the existing company or the existing teams at the are going to be the greatest asset. You know, who are you able to retrain people who are already at that company to operate or otherwise work with those robots? And I think just continuing to involve people and be realistic about your expectations of them is, and supportive is also important from the manufacturing standpoint.
Both very human-centric answers. First, the safety of the people and also the decision-making of all the people involved. As I wrote out that question, it got me thinking, if I had asked you that question back in 2014, what might your answer have been, or how might it have been different if I asked that 10 years ago?
Well, in 2014, I wasn't even working in manufacturing. So
true. Yes. Yes. Good point. Good caveat. Well, hey, you know, plowing through in the conversation, I saw that you recently spoke at the R24 conference in Denmark's robotics hub of Odense. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly.
You are not, but
I'm not.
They're probably not going to hear this.
That's fair. How do you pronounce it correctly? I love actually getting this right in the interviews.
I think it's closer to Odense, but now I'll wait for someone that I work with there to correct me on it.
If anyone listens to this, please comment on LinkedIn or Twitter
who had the closest pronunciation.
Yes. Regardless, we've covered both ends of the spectrum on the pronunciation, but the pronunciation isn't the big thing. I believe your talk was answering this question. So I'm going to ask you the same question here. How do we ensure the robots of tomorrow enhance society rather than detract from it?
I think a lot of it comes down to, like, let's deploy our expertise and capital, if we're going to use some business buzzwords, to areas where people benefit from these robots being there. And this is why I love the recent, like, you know, say what you will about humanoids and all these other, like, big hyped areas in manufacturing. At least people are talking about manufacturing, because manufacturing is both critical and a lot of awful jobs. And if we're going to put our time and money and all sorts of other resources into building new technology, let's do it in areas like that. Let's do it in areas like that, or agriculture, or, you know, the basics of healthcare or construction. Let's try not to, you know, put robots in the creative spaces or in areas where, you know, the self-driving car industry was $100 billion trying to figure out how to drive people to Starbucks when they're already in the car. Right? Is that really making people's life easier? Like, my car is pretty comfortable. It doesn't really take much out of my day to be behind the wheel. And I think this is really what it comes down to. It's like, you know, let's focus on these big problems. Let's focus down on Maslow's hierarchy. And also, along the same time, though, let's make sure that we've got proper involvement between users, policymakers, product developers, to make sure that we're not, like, putting unsafe systems. I mean, we talked about that in manufacturing, but I think all of, like, any of you, like, 100% of your viewers will know the discussions on these topics around self-driving vehicles, for example. And I think that's another key part here. So we're doing a lot better at deploying the capital, but let's make sure that as these robots move outside of manufacturing and into commercial spaces and into the general public, which in some cases, as they already are, that there are proper discussions around this and that people are learning from each other. Something that comes to mind is discussions that I've had, just advice that I gave to various members, various public servants in the Canadian government and the Ontario government and some cities, around the deployment of sidewalk robots after there was some negative press about that in Toronto. And some people said, well, how do we do better? And one of the things I said is suggested that they look at things like existing drone regulations, or, you know, things like ISO 13849, or a number of the existing standards that exist in manufacturing spaces or mining spaces on how you deploy these systems. And I think that's also important for people to learn from existing successful deployments and not try to reinvent the wheel, because reinventing the wheel is costly. But when it comes to people's health, or we'll just say well-being generally, it opens up corner cases. And I think that's important to consider as well.
You've brought a lot to the table today. If I think through our whole conversation, focus has been a big part of it, focusing on the right applications for society, focusing on a niche application for your business. You know, I appreciate that you were just talking about robots in Toronto, because one of my last questions is, you're also part of the Canadian Robotics Council. And part of that statement is you're looking at how robotics are fueling economic development in Canada. So that's my question. How are you seeing robots fuel economic development on your home turf?
Not as much as I'd like, honestly. I think Canada, for those people who are unfamiliar, has a very high amount, a high concentration of small and medium enterprises, which, as we talked about a little bit earlier, have structural factors which makes it harder for them to adopt robots. And so that's a challenge. But on the plus side, which one of the reasons why I'm very excited about the potential of the CRC is we do have enough of a critical mass in manufacturing to have people who know where robots are, to have suppliers who have substantial presences in Canada. And on top of that, we have a lot of primary industries which really, really need robots. If I look at countries with, you know, if we look at the IFR numbers, I think it's usually like, depending on the year, it's like either South Korea or Singapore is at the top most of the time. But if you look at those industries, they're starting to, those countries, they're starting to cap out at where robots can be deployed, just because everything that can be done in those industries, given current technology, is being done. The adoption is complete. But in Canada, there's so much low-hanging fruit in our primary industries, various sorts of resource extraction, various sorts of resource extraction, agriculture, construction. We've got a lot of infrastructure that needs to be continued to be upgraded and maintained because it's a very big country. There's all sorts of areas that we need to continue to keep an eye on from an environmental perspective or a national sovereignty perspective. There's a huge amount of demand for robots in both areas where it's very low-hanging fruit from a requirements perspective, and also from an operational design domain, safety is a little bit easier to handle, right? There's a lot of areas in Canada where there's a lot of industry and very, very few members of the general public, which makes the safety cases easier, makes deployment easier. And that's one of the things that I'm very excited about, is where can Canadian businesses and Canada in general adopt these robots that, you know, help national productivity as well as just help it be a generally like safer and more pleasant society.
So then what is your perspective? You mentioned there's a lot of low hanging fruit. What do you feel is the lowest hanging fruit, or one that you're just, as someone that has spent their career in robotics, you're just looking at it and you're just like, oh, this would be perfect for it. Why aren't we going quicker on this one?
Obviously in manufacturing, there's a lot that can be done there, right? Like just making, like just deploying more robots, more, whether it's manipulator arms or AMRs in manufacturing, there's a lot that can be done there. And that, you know, requires just some more, you know, just general support for people to help, you know, train these small and medium companies to help inform them on where to go. But beyond that, I think in terms of the other low hanging fruit, I think there's a lot that can be done. The subset of construction, which is infrastructure inspection, I think there's a lot that can be done there. I think there's some interesting small companies, like targeted use cases in construction, which are showing up, but those are still going to be targeted. I think when it comes to like more end-to-end automation, there's a huge amount of potential in agriculture in particular. It's a major part of Canada's economy. You've got the safety stuff is a lot cleaner to deal with because they've got these wide open spaces where, you know, there's just no one around. And the technology is a natural continuation from AMRs, like factory AMRs, which have spent the last decade being refined. It's a pretty natural continuation in terms of form factor and sensing and work that's being done. So I'm quite bullish on you know, your general survey cases, because that definitely does save some costs across the board, not just construction, but also like we talked about resource extraction and things like that. But also agriculture generally is another area that I think is an area that we could be doing that there's a lot more adoption potential in.
Yeah, it's interesting because this is, you know, it's manufacturing happy hour. So we're primarily focused on manufacturing, but
there's more mining.
I figured mining was going to, I lump manufacturing into industrial quite a bit. So construction as well as agriculture have been kind of working their way into the show every once in a while. So Well, I appreciate you taking us through everything from your story to the adoption of robotics to the ethical considerations. My last question is there anything that we didn't cover, anything you wish I would have asked you in this conversation, or a final thought you want to leave the leaders listening to this show with?
I mean, there's so much to talk about, and I just say that I'd look forward to future conversations like this.
Absolutely. Well, hey, it was great talking to you today, Ryan. I've been really impressed with everything that you and ClearPath and Auto Motors have accomplished, not only just recently with the acquisition by Rockwell, but over the years as well. So pleasure talking to you. And I think it's time that we refill our beers here at the conference hotel. So cheers. Thanks for jumping on the show.
All right. Have a good one, Chris.
Hey, thank you for listening. As always, if you want to learn more, head to the show notes page. Just go to manufacturinghappyhour.com/181. There you can find links to ClearPath Robotics by Rockwell Automation, Auto Motors by Rockwell Automation, and the Canadian Robotics Council. Also, as we wrap up, I want to thank all of our sponsors. First off, Harding, welcome to the Manufacturing Happy Hour Club. You might have heard their Senior Vice President of Marketing, Digital Strategy, and IT not too long ago on episode 175 at the Industrial Marketing Summit. That was Amanda Marks, and we'll be hearing more about them and their connectivity solutions very soon here on the show. Plus, shout out to SwipeGuide, the platform that's empowering frontline teams through standard work instructions and skills development. And by the way, I'm going to give this more of a spotlight here on the show soon, but we're partnering with SwipeGuide on the first ever Manufacturing Happy Hour tour. That's right, we're going on a little Midwest road trip coming up in May 2024, where we'll be throwing events in Grand Rapids, Michigan on May 21st, Chicago, Illinois on May 22nd, and Minneapolis, Minnesota on May 23rd. Back to back to back. We have something unique in store for each of these events, so keep listening and you'll be hearing more details on these parties during the episodes leading up to these dates. And then finally, I want to thank the Robotics Summit. They're the ones that got me hooked up with Ryan. I mentioned them at the start of the episode. This event is focused on helping engineers learn how to develop the next generation of commercial robots. If you're looking for an event focused on the future of robotics, then join me on May 1st and 2nd in Boston, Massachusetts, and head to manufacturinghappyhour.com/robotics2024 to get signed up today. And that's a wrap for this week. Thanks so much for sticking around. Stay innovative, stay thirsty. We'll catch you again next week. See you soon.
Thanks for listening to Manufacturing Happy Hour, powered by the Industrial Network.